Jack Bacon, Reel 3. You were just saying what a hard campaign Italy was.
It was much harder than... do you want to put that top down? It was much harder than the Egyptian one. The weather, we were still in khaki drill, I think even up as far as December. And it had rained absolutely constantly. We had no electricity in our depot. And we used to work at night by candlelight doing reports and that, all these things. And the roads up to the front were just, they were a quagmire. We couldn't get lorries through them or anything. We instituted, and I ran what was called a recovery section. We used to, I had a line of girls and the bar and the rollers there, and we used to make up what were called 10-man party patrol packs, which was one day's ration for 10 men. And they contained all the things they needed. And we used to have to send those out, and they used to go on the backs of donkeys or mules up to the front because lorries couldn't get up there. The weather was so bad. And we had the terrible thing about Cassino and Anzio, which was the second invasion on Wendelin, which was just near Rome. And the idea was by maintaining Salerno area where we were in the Naples and that, and then coming further up the coast, we were going to, with a pincer movement, enclose all the German divisions in the middle, which included Cassino, which you've probably heard about, which was the monastery at the top of a 1,000-foot hill in which Jerry had got his troops in there. Well, anyway, we went into Anzio and we were virtually unopposed. And we landed there with the Americans and the British, and it was one of the guards' brigades went forward, I don't know, I can't remember which one, and they got right into Rome. And they came back and they signaled back and they said, "We are unopposed, we are in Rome." And there was an American general called Mark Clark, and he said, "Bring them back. You've heard the story. The Americans are going to take Rome." So the headlines in the New York Times would be, "Americans take Rome." Well, that must have cost us 10,000 casualties. And also, we lost all the chance of encircling Gerriama, all the everything about the Germans there. Then we had Cassino stuck in the middle there, and it took us 6 months to get that. And there were several occasions they talk about friendly fire where our troops were around the base, stuck there waiting for an attack to go through. And they were put out there, while you've probably read it in the paper, blue on blue. They just put the blue markers out. So what does Yanks do? Bomb them. Time after time after time. And I think if I remember rightly, it was the Poles who eventually took. Am I right?
Poles and Canadians.
Yeah. But that was a thing which should never have happened. Never. But the conditions our troops, our infantry troops, had to put up with there was diabolical. It was really diabolical. And apparently every river that they crossed, Volturno, Sangro, all those, was a cemetery. And then very, very distressing. I feel very deep. As a matter of fact, I wrote a letter to the paper 3 or 4 weeks ago. One chap had written in about this war here and that, and how little is thought now of the troops who were at Alamein. And there were several fellows went out there, and there was one of them, I think it was the Black Watch, one of the chappies there, 80 odd, whatever it was, he went to this beautiful, beautiful grave, and it was beautiful, and they were all 1,000 men from the Black Watch. And they panned across the headstones, Fusilier, Bombardier, whatever he was, age 18, 19, 20, 21. And that bloke cried, and I sat and cried. And I think myself then, and I think I put it in my letter to the paper, how those men that gave everything for this country to make it good, that we can now allow hundreds of thousands of foreigners who have done nothing for this country, never earned a penny for this country, can come in here and they can earn more than I get a week as a pension. There's something wrong. And those fellows out there, they gave their lives for this Britain. Without Alamein, I don't think we would have survived. I think we'd have been in dire trouble. Whether eventually, with the Americans' help, we would have won. If we hadn't had American Sherman tanks in the desert, I don't think we'd have won. But I think the equipment that they gave us was absolutely appalling. Absolutely appalling. And yet the British troops, they did so well. But then in the early days, when they fought the Italians on their own, the Italians didn't want to fight. They got no interest in fighting at all. And they just gave up. It's the same as the Iraqis in the last thing. They didn't really want to fight.
What contact did you have with the Americans? And
virtually none. Virtually none.
Did they have their own supply depots for their own men?
I don't get me wrong, because don't forget we're talking about the 8th Army, which I was, and the Americans were 5th Army, which came in from Algeria. But they did have an American squadron of bombers came over, and we used to, from the airfields where I was, they used to run what was called the Benghazi run, mail run. They used to fly from the base with bombs and bomb Benghazi, because that's where Rommel was getting in his supplies from Italy. And they used to do this night after night, regularly. It used to be a mail run, they would call it. And the Americans came out and they said, oh, you're doing this. Well, I reckon we'll have a go at that. So the fella said, well, we think you ought to come out with us a few times, because there are no signposts in the desert. You've got 2,000 miles of desert and it all looks the same. Ah! You know. Yeah. So a squadron of 12 went out. None of them got there. And that was Syria, Palestine, the desert, Sahara, all over the place. But I watch a lot of war films and history on the Sky, and the Americans in the Pacific had a tough time. That was absolutely terrible. Some of those islands they had to take there, and the Japs wouldn't surrender. They just would not surrender. And some of the American pilots were very, very, very brave, very brave.
Just taking you back to Italy, did you have much problem with losing supply ships coming in?
No, not then, no.
Did you have much air attack by the Germans?
Occasionally, not a lot.
Did they target the supply depots?
No, they didn't. They targeted the ports. Bari was one. It was a most massive ammunition ship went up there. They was heard about 200 miles away. They used to bomb Naples fairly regularly, where we used to get our stuff in.
Did you still use the Bedford OYs, or did you go on to GMC's lorries by then?
We were using, I think, if I remember rightly, Bedfords and 10-ton Macs. Those 10-ton Macs were beautiful. Oh, they were a dream. We also used to have, you've heard about the Ducks, D-U-K-Ws.
Yeah.
Those come in our depot. They were big things. They were wonderful things. Some of their brains there, I'll tell you.
And what sort of transport planes did you have coming into the
transport
airport? Planes did you have coming into the airport?
No, not as far as I know.
You didn't have any supplies?
Wait a minute. Yes, I did. I remember this because during the casino thing, the blokes were moaning about the fact that when we were waiting sometimes for ammunition there to get up to us, the Americans flew in from California strawberries and cream. No, air transport didn't really come into it. It was mainly ships.
Did you get?
And they bought a lot of. They built a lot of Liberty ships, as you remember. And one interesting thing is that in every port where they bought stuff in, which was for the population, not for the troops, as help for the what do they call that? United Nations Relief. Was it UNRWA?
Nations were formed then, but
no,
it was a relief organisation.
So they ran this relief organisation for the population where they were starving. And they came into our town, and every town, they had what was called a town major, who was a British major, who would then arrange for the distribution of the stuff. So what did he do? He got the mafia in. And they all went back market. All where you could get nothing on rations. And I know this is true, because when the war was over, you won't believe this, I booked a seat on a train back to my depot. And when I got to, I think it was Domodossola in Sweden, and crossing into Italy, they gave me a ration card with various things marked on it. And the chap who gave it to me was the conductor of the train, I think. He said, "You might just as well throw it away now." He said, "You won't get anything on it," and you couldn't get anything on it. So I went back in my depot and lived in there for a month, had a month there.
Prior to that, were you living
and
I'll tell in billets?
I'm going to tell you an honest thing here now. Because of the praise that I got when I ran that depot, I used to think when I went, it would go to pot. And it didn't. It still ran.
You set up the systems properly. Hmm? You'd set up the systems
well,
properly.
Well, yeah, but you must never think that you are independent, because it's not so.
No one's indispensable.
There's always someone who can come in and take over.
Did you get any time for rest and relaxation while you were there?
I can't think. We used it was arranged that we used to go down to Sorrento.
Yeah.
We used to get a day, perhaps every 3 months, to go to Sorrento. You couldn't, you were working too hard. I went across to the Isle of Capri once, and they've got the Blue Grotto there, which you go in a small boat and you pull through by a chain. And the sea there, it's 80 feet deep, and it's so calm and so beautiful, you feel you put your hand down and pull the stones up from underneath. It's really beautiful there. And when the sun's setting, it shines through, then it turns all the sea into a sort of a liquid purple, all sorts of colour come out. Then you go up in the town on what they call the funicular. And if you're brave, you go in a taxi, because the road which goes all round the curve, it drops sheer down like that. And these taxi drivers are driving one-handed, and they're yapping away like mad. Cars are coming the other way, taxis are coming, and they miss each other by about 9 inches. It was nice, Capri.
Did you have a particular mate that you went round with?
Yeah, Len. My mate Len.
What did he do?
And the other one, the other great one, was that one, John, and he died about 4 months ago. That was very sad. He ran one section. Len isn't in that. Oh, Len. He wasn't in that pit. You know why? He got demoted. He was a very upright. He was about 6'3". Very upright. He looked an officer. And he had a girlfriend in Naples. And he used to go out most nights when he could get out. And he'd go down the transport place and say to the corporal in charge, "I want to go to Naples Bridge." Okay. So he'd go out. And he put an officer's cap on. Officer's trench coat, his stick on the boss name, and everybody was shooting him. And he got caught. Because the girlfriend he had was in headquarters. He was seen coming in. He wasn't an officer at all. Mm. So he got demoted and got sent away. No, very sad. We lost Johnny. It was only a few months ago. No, we were the inseparable three. That's Nobby Clark. That's the one who told the gay boy to go. If he didn't go, he'd get him over the balcony.
All the people in this picture are all sergeants? And
yeah.
Did you have a sergeant's mess?
Yes. And that was a chap in charge of all the VD.
And did you have a bar and
yeah.
And was the
food was
edible?
Good.
Yeah.
Food was good in Italy. It's very good.
Did you buy it in from the locals on the black market?
No, I used to take it out of the depot.
And did the officers have good rations? The officers?
Now, you want me to answer and say no, they didn't do as well as us, because it's not true, they did better than us. I could tell you one or two stories which I'm not going to put down on tape. About the murder of someone there. I was told to keep my mouth shut.
Did you find much corruption there?
Yes.
People, senior ones?
Yes.
Lining their nest?
Yes. This major in particular. Yeah, but I've got to be very careful what goes on that tape.
Well, so we don't name any names. It's just a long time ago. Entirely up to you.
That's how a weekender. Italy was hard. You think that I lost 4 stone there? And that's a lot. I was 12 and a half stone when I left Egypt. 10 stone when I went in, 12 and a half when I came out, and just over 8 stone when I came. My mother nearly fell, so did my father. He said, my God, what's happened to you?
So how long were you in Italy? Did you stay in the Salerno area, or did you move up?
We were about 20 odd miles from Salerno, moved up from, we were right underneath Vesuvius. I can't remember now, probably 30 miles from Salerno.
And you stayed in that area as a headquarters depot again?
We stayed in that place until I came home.
Which was when?
I don't think they've got it down the list, have they?
Did you come home to prepare for D-Day?
No. You don't think I'd had enough? Prepare for D-Day. No, I got a damn great big depot to run when I came back. I came back in... returned to the United Kingdom 25th of the 8:45.
So this was after V-Day?
Yes.
So how much information did you get about what was going on in the rest of
everything.
Europe?
We used to get the paper. There used to be an army paper.
How up to date was that?
We had I'll tell you one thing. We had a celebration day off when VE Day came, and the Italians, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, were outside our depot. They were going to raid our depot because they got no food. And we had to put the blokes on with machine guns on the doors because they were going to raid us. They said, you don't need any food anymore. That was their idea. The war is over, you don't need any more. Unfortunately, we did. Well,
so did you see many defeated Germans? Did they come back through the lines past you?
Yeah, a few, but they weren't bad. They weren't a bad lot. But they were damn good workers. When we had them working for us, they were very, very good. You only had to tell them what to do, and they did it.
And did you collect any of their equipment for souvenirs?
Yes, I got two stormtroopers' daggers and an Iron Cross first class, which I gave to my son-in-law. And I haven't gotten that, I wish I'd got. It's the only things I ever got. Some of the blokes are coming home stacked with stuff.
What sort of pay did you get as a sergeant major?
As near as I can remember, and you're pushing me a little bit now, I think I used to get about £5 a week.
And
I think.
Was that kept for you at home, waiting for you to come home,
no,
or
no,
paid
you
to your wife?
No, you drew it. You got a pay book, and you could either draw it out or leave it in credit, whichever you wished.
There's a certain amount sent home to your wife? Or?
Yeah, there's money deducted from that, goes home to the wife. You can't touch that. That is taken out before anything is left for you in your balance.
£5 bought a lot of things in Italy?
Hmm?
Did £5 buy a lot of things in Italy?
Oh, yeah. Well, in those days, not a booze. The Italian bars and that, they used to... One of the great things, I think, was vermouth. Which that's what it used to like, and they used to put methylated spirits in it. And I had one poor chappy, Maddox. He used to go on this stuff every night, and he came back and he went mad. He needed to bit his tongue off. And the military police used to go round the bars and they'd ask for a bottle of vermouth, pour some on the tail, put a match to it. And of course, if it flared up, they'd shut the place down. But it was very, very dangerous to go out at night time. I never went out at night time alone unless I had a bayonet down there and a pistol in my hand. Never, ever, ever. They used to lose anything from 10 to 18 chaps a night in Naples. They kick them to death. And they pinch their passports. Not their passports, their paybooks. Give to the Germans for infiltration. Hard, hard, hard.
So do you feel that...
But the Italian people I found were extremely friendly. Very, very friendly. And though they had very little, they would invite you into their home and they'd share with you what they got. But they lived in terrible, terrible, terrible squalor. It's unbelievable. We wouldn't believe it. You could go into a room there and they'd have a hole in the floor and that was a toilet. And it stunk to high heaven. Terrible.
Did the church have a lot of influence on the Italians?
On me?
On the Italian people there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. They're very, very strong-willed, the Catholic there. Very strong. But the Mafia were the terrible thing. They ran everything there. Everything.
everything.
Did you have any British officers having deals with them?
Yes. You don't want to talk about that, do you? When I was ordered once to take bags of flour to somewhere, and when I got there, which was about 6 or 7 miles away with my driver, he said, hey, he said, what are we doing, Sergeant Major? I said, well, I've been ordered by the Major to take this here. He said, look over there. It was a Corps of Military Police headquarters, CMPs. He said, if they see this lorry out anywhere up on the side of a hill there, say, see this lorry there with flour bags coming out of it, you're going to be inside for life. That was a naughty moment. I think I'm almost running out of ideas.
Okay, so what happens as the war ended and the operation in Italy sort of wound down?
Yeah.
And what happened to you then?
I was back home. I was back in England with my big depot.
That was
and my conscientious objectors.
So tell me about them. Tell me about those for the tape.
I've told you, haven't I?
Not on the tape, no.
Oh, not on the tape. Oh. Oh, when I came back to England, we flew back in Lancaster bombers. And I was in charge of the plane, and I sat up with the pilot and the navigator and that. And they let me go down, it was a Lancaster bomber, they let me go down into the bomb bay, which was a plastic nacelle in the front, and lay down there where their bomb aimer used to lay. And it was a weird feeling because there was nothing underneath. And there were 20 blokes on the plane. They cleared everything out. They made whole circles there for the blokes to sit in, balance it all out on the weight. And we're going over the Alps, and I looked out, and the starboard, I said to him, this here, Pilot Wood, I remember his name. I said, here, I said, Pilot, look at this. I said, you've got oil pouring out our number four engine on the starboard side there. He said, what are you worrying? He said, we've got three more. We're flying right over the brink in Alps. I thought, well, it's nearly 6 years of war, and I'm going to end up in the Alps. Anyway, we landed Rugby. We then sent up to Leeds, where we were there for about a month in billets. And then I was given this huge depot near Rugby. And they had many, many railway lines, huge sheds, 6,000 tonne in each, and conscientious objectors as labour. And I used to set them off on their jobs, and then there was one occasion where I'd set a gang off loading a train, went back to see how they were getting on, they're sitting reading their Bibles. So, in typical Sergeant Major voice, I told them to get off their bums and get on with the work, and that's it, and use one or two swear words. So they immediately reported me to the Major in charge of the whole opposition, and I got severely reprimanded. Not on the record, but he was told I mustn't do that, and these men are here working for us. If I give them a direct order, they should obey my direct order. But of course, they're not soldiers, are they? They're civilians, which I suppose made a difference. But I wasn't very pleased at the time. Then I got demobbed.
Did you think about staying in as a regular?
I did, but I wish I had. Because by the time I was 40, I'd have been out with a very, very, very good pension.
So had you had some demob leave or
yes you got no
some leave when you came back to the UK
once you've no we never had any leave when we came back, at least I can't remember. Must have had leave I don't remember leave though, not when I got back to the UK. In fact, I'm sure I didn't, because we went straight up to Leeds, then I went straight to the depot, and I stayed there until I was then sent down to be demobbed.
So you were away from home for, what, 5 years?
About 5.5 years. It's a long time, isn't it? And every Christmas we were away, we used to think, well, this is our life. Not this is your life, as I'm telling you, but this is our life.
Did you manage to celebrate Christmas away?
Yes, anyway? Always. And the officers served the meal up. I think they usually manage to find turkeys, but I don't know where they found them from. They must have raided local farms. But we didn't get turkeys in Egypt. The only thing was, in Egypt, wherever you went, there'd be a kid selling eggs of bread. Eggs of bread. You ever heard that saying?
Yeah.
Eggs of bread. You could be anywhere in the desert, and this kid would pop out and got a little tray. Eggs of bread.
So,
well, come and prompt me, because I'm running
so
out.
So you got demobbed?
Yeah, and went home.
So what did you get as a demob suit?
A Burton suit.
Stripey?
50 bob. No, stripey. No, plain. Plain. I was a businessman. I had to go out of business, didn't I? And socks and a hat and a suitcase and a shirt, I think. Well, I can't remember. Got
did you have some money that you saved up from...
I had some money, yeah. I had 1,100 quid.
That was quite a considerable amount in those days.
I gambled £400 of that in 3 months because I was mad. My father used to... He'd been doing the horses all his life. He kept on winning these few quid, and I thought, come on, this is the way to do it. And I got no idea what I was doing. And in 3 months, I lost 440 quid. And I said, never again. I've never bet since. Never.
So you came home.
See, I'm quite strong-willed, but the same with the cigarettes. I never smoked again.
So you came home.
Came home and found my wife with a sailor and a baby.
And had you...
Which didn't please me.
...been in contact with her?
Oh, yeah, we used to write to each other.
And she'd not
no.
said anything?
No, nothing.
And she wasn't aware you were coming home?
She knew I was coming home. No, she knew I was coming home. Because as soon as I got back, I phoned.
So there's no Dear John letter?
No. You didn't think I'd enough? It was terrible because I had a beautiful, beautiful house there. 3-bedroom garage, and it was right on the edge of Hadley Woods. Step over the fence and you were in the woods. I paid £850 for it in 1939. I don't know what it's worth today. A lot of money. But I just walked out. Went to another.
So what would you say about your life in the services?
I enjoyed it. No.
No regrets?
No. I think possibly the only regret was I didn't stay on. The time I was 40, I'd have taken a commission and gone on. Because there were two or three of the officers approached me and said, well, you're good, why don't you go for a commission? And because I think, simply and solely, because I'd been with my chaps and they hadn't changed an awful lot from the time the unit was started till then, I didn't want to go. I was more than happy with them.
And have you kept in touch with them over the years?
This has been the most difficult thing ever, for the simple reason I tried to organise a meeting of the boys. We had them from Scotland, a hell of a lot from the Tyneside area, because the 50th Division was a Tyne to Tees Division. Liverpool, there were a load from Liverpool, Birmingham, Norfolk, Cornwall, Kent, all over the place. It wasn't feasible. I had 4 that I've contacted with. There's 2 of those that died. 3. I had 5. The transport corporal who lived at Windsor. His wife and I still send Christmas cards to each other. It's sad when you think of all those boys gone. And I'll tell you a very, very, very strange thing. There are about 100 men in my unit. I've done this 2 or 3 times. I can sit down... And I can write down 90% of those names. And as I write them down, I can see each one of them. Is this strange? Each one I can see as plain.
Must have made a big impression on you.
I'm afraid, you see, one of the things was, I was average age of 23, 24, 25. And there were many chaps in my unit who were 30, 35. So although I'm my age, some of those would be approaching 95 to 100. They'd be gone. And I think on my computer, if I put in there, so a reunion with 23 BSD, how many would even look? Now, not 1 in 100 wouldn't. Do you think so?
Probably it's not an area that they would look into, is it, a computer? No.
I don't think so. I think in most of them, it's a part of their life which is gone, not to be repeated.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, except it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It's been very, very enjoyable. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
I don't often have...